Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 15, Text 25. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Ayam hi dehino deho.
Ayam hi dehino deho.
Dravya jnana kriyatmaka.
Dravya jnana kriyatmaka.
Dehino vibhidha klesha.
Dehino
vibhidha klesha.
Dehino
vibhidha klesha. Satapa krid udharita.
Santapa krid udharita.
Any ladies chant? I am this, he certainly, dehina of living entity, deha body, dravya jnana kriya atmaka, consisting of the material elements, the senses for acquiring knowledge, and the acting senses, dehina of a living entity, vividha, various, klesha, sufferings, satapa, and of the pains, krit, the cause, udharita, is declared. The living entity in the bodily conception of life is absorbed in the body, which is a combination of physical elements, the five senses for gathering knowledge, and the five senses of action along with the mind. Through the mind, the living entity suffers three kinds of tribulations, aribhautika, aridhaivika, and adhyatmika. Therefore, this body is the source of all miseries. Purport. In the fifth canto, 554, while instructing his sons, Rishabhadev said, Ashan api kleshida ashadeha. The body, although temporary, is the cause of all the miseries of material existence. As already discussed in the previous verse, the entire material creation is based on mental concoction. The mind sometimes induces us to think that if we purchase an automobile, we can enjoy the physical elements such as earth, water, air, and fire, combined in the forms of iron, plastic, petrol, and so on. Working with the five material elements, panchabhutas, as well as our five knowledge-gathering senses like the eyes, ears, and tongues, and our five active senses like the hands and legs, we become involved in the material condition. Thus, we are subjected to the tribulations known as adhyatmika, adhidaivika, and adhibhautika. The mind is the center because the mind creates all these things. As soon as the material object is struck, however, the mind is affected and we suffer. For example, with the material elements, the working senses and the knowledge-gathering senses, we create a very nice car, and when the car is accidentally smashed in a collision, I was going to say collusion, it's so contaminating today, the mind suffers. And through the mind, the living entity suffers. The fact is that the living entity, while concocting with the mind, creates the material conditions. Because matter is destructible, through the material conditions, the living entity suffers. Otherwise, the living entity is detached from all material conditions. When one comes to the Brahman platform, the platform of spiritual life, fully understanding that he is spirit soul, aham brahmasmi, he is no longer affected by lamentation or hankering. As the Lord... As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18:54, Brahmaputta Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochati Nakanchati. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. Elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita 15:7, the Lord says, Mamai Vamso Jiva Bhuta Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Manashastani Indriyani Prakriti Stani Karshita. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. The living entity is actually part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is unaffected by material conditions, but because the mind, mana, is affected, the senses are affected, and the living entity struggles for existence within this material world. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siyadvaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So mantra has become an English word. And I think in English it means a short phrase that has so much meaning it can be repeated again and again because it has some application. So I've composed a mantra. I'm going to share it with you. All suffering is not actual, it's perceptual. All suffering is not what is there, but it's how we are seeing it. The material body, matter is called vikara. Vikara means it's constantly changing. And because we identify with matter, then we undergo these changes, but they don't really happen in us. And one classic example is given. I think Prabhupada quotes this in the purport in the second canto, maybe ninth chapter, first verse. Marge Prickett asked the question, how did the living entity, you know, come to the world? And it's the desire of the living entity. And then in that purport, Prabhupada gives the example of a child has a desire for the moon, a position which he cannot have by his constitution. The mother satisfies the child by giving the child a pot of water, and the moon is reflected in the water. The child can't hold the pot, it shakes. Then the moon shakes, or the reflection shakes, and the child is in anxiety. But what is the child's anxiety? Not that the moon is moving, but the child thinks the moon is moving because he's misidentified the moon with the reflection in the water. And this is the basic point that's also made here, that all suffering is perceptual. It's how we see things. It's the mind. I was in Colombia yesterday, and Jai Jagat and myself were giving the Yoga Sutras. We have a bit different styles. I generally go verse by verse, and he summarizes the mind. And I had a disciple that was visiting, and she was going through a lot of anxiety in her life. And sometimes what happens is when you come to Krishna consciousness, this happens, and you have kind of like a physical collapse in Krishna consciousness, you may associate that with Krishna consciousness. So she had this kind of association. But then she was visiting me, and it's kind of like an ashram. So already she was feeling, okay, I'm kind of like in an ashram. There's a little, she told me, she's a little bit nervous. Then she came, we had a yoga teacher training, about 30 people, and I began for an hour, and you know, I'm her guru, so she came to the class, and she listened, and I was describing this kind of sankhya a bit. And then I went, and then Jai Jagannath was presenting his class about the mind and how the mind works, etc. And I was surprised. She sat there. There was like 4 hours. About 4 hours, she sat there. I was kind of happy. And then afterwards, I said, well, give me reflection. You know, you sat there for 4 hours. And she had a realization. She said, it's the mind. It's the mind. And that's also a mantra, because it all exists in the mind, and that's what's being said. And therefore, there's no need for lamentation on things, on the transformation of things. There's no need for lamentation. But we do, we may lament that people identify with things and suffer. It's not that we don't have compassion, but our compassion is directed to the cause of misery. And it's not that matter is changing. It's not that matter is changing. Matter is changing. That's not the problem. That's why that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Asochan anvasochas tvam pragyavadam chabashase gatasun agatasun cha nanu sochanti pandita, Arjuna is being chastised by Krishna, who is his guru. Although you are speaking learned words, Arjuna, you're a fool, because the wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. We should not be lazy philosophically. If we don't understand things, we should inquire. Because otherwise, you hear this, the wise lament neither for the living nor the dead, the International Society for Heartless People. We don't lament for the living nor the dead. It's all Krishna's mercy, Prabhu. I think I made that mistake at the very beginning of my Krishna consciousness. Some guy was visiting and his wife died. I think I may have said, it's Krishna's mercy. And he grabbed me by the neck practically. If one more person tells me it's Krishna's mercy. It's not like that. We have compassion. But we have compassion for the real cause of suffering. And the real cause of suffering is not the change of body. It's the identification with the body that causes people to suffer. I think of this very, very practically. My dear mother, still alive at 97 years old. So once a month at least, I visit her when I'm here. And I feel for her, but I don't feel that necessarily, you know, she's dying. I feel that she doesn't have, the compassion is she doesn't have Atmagyan. And if one has Atmagyan, the experience of death is a whole other thing. I was there when Prabhupada left the world, and we came into his room, and Prabhupada, I remember, in the morning I woke up and we heard, surprisingly, that Prabhupada's coming from Rishikesh, where he was recuperating. He decided that the symptoms of his body and just the circumstance that there's no recuperation, he's coming to Vrindavan to leave the world. And then he sits there in a chair, and where before Prabhupada, there's only about maybe this many people in the room. At that time, there weren't that many people in Vrindavan. And he looked at us, he said, if one is going to die, let him come to Vrindavan. And then he said, with such conviction and realization, but what is death but a change of body? And then he quoted Bhagavad Gita 2:13. Deheno smin yata dehe komaran yovanam jara tata dehantara praptir diras tatanamuyate. That as the soul moves from boyhood, from childhood to boyhood to youth to old age, similarly the time of death, self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. It's a whole different experience. It's tragic, but the tragedy is your separation from that person, not the destination of that person. I remember it's preaching here in New York, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, and we were struggling, we were trying to do something, and we had this large changing bodies exhibit, and we'd keep it in the street, and people come up from the subway, they'd see it, and they'd look at it, and I would go to them, what do you think of the concept, man? Wow, that's kind of interesting, it's interesting. I said, How many bodies are there? There's 7, 8 bodies. How many people? One. That means that the person or who you are is different from the body. And therefore, it's a whole different perspective of how to look on things. What is tragedy? Tragedy is ignorance. That's what tragedy is. And that's why Prabhupada emphasized as welfare and compassion, the giving of knowledge above anything else. Because that's the real solution to the problem. So here, this is the Bhagavatam, it doesn't mess around. This is kind of a heavy story. Because someone's child has just died. Not only child has just died, but the child that he couldn't have with 10,000 other wives. I don't know if he had time for anything else. 10,000 wives. He didn't have any. It final.
10 million.
What?
10 million.
Okay. Couldn't. And he finally had a child. And he was so attached to the child, and the child died. And then the same sages who performed the yajna to give him the blessings to have a child, now they're coming to pacify him. And they're preaching there's no need for lamentation. It's a very, very fine line. between the application of the philosophy and the feelings of the heart. You can't neglect a person's emotions simply on the basis of philosophy, but you can't neglect the philosophy simply on the basis of emotions. It's a very, very fine line. And I'll give you a very good example of that. When Prabhupada passed away, it's Nitya Lila Pavishta. It's a glorious moment because the soul enters into samadhi. It's Radha Krishna Lila. So it's a glorious thing, and it's worthy of celebration. In fact, I remember the first funeral I went to in Vrindavan, where it's a very interesting system. You can't build the stretcher that for the person who's dying until he died. And then you have to make arrangement. There's a burning ghat, and you take the body on a stretcher, and it's decorated, and we're walking somberly, and someone, you know, who's a little bit more experienced stands. You know, it's glorious. Dying in Vrindavan, it's glorious. But still, you don't hold the celebration for the person passing away until 11 days afterwards. Because it's sad also. The separation should be intense. And then when I was in Prabhupada's room when he left, I remember one godbrother from South America, his name is Nilamani, I remember his name. He just fainted and collapsed and fell right on the floor. So there's feelings for people. There's feelings for people's suffering. There's feelings for our separation from great souls. We should feel that as a tremendous pain. And we should feel for people who don't have knowledge and therefore are suffering the transformation of the body. That is not actually happening within them. The whole purpose of yoga is to bring the mind to sattva. Sattva is a Sanskrit word, it means goodness. It also means the nature of reality. The nature of something before it has been transformed. So you bring the mind to sattva. What is the nature? The mind is a lens. Before the lens is transformed, when the lens is a lens, when the lens is new, when the lens is the way it should be, it's clean and it's not distorted and there's no static. So what is our and when the mind is in sattva, you do not suffer because you see things as they are and reality is beautiful. You see things as they are. But when the mind becomes distorted by our desires for inertia and lethargy and our desires for our intense desires and ambitions and our lusts, then the mind becomes like this. And then we suffer what? Not what's happening, but what appears to be happening by this mind. And therefore, what yoga does by focusing on one of the thoughts as a psychosomatic process, the other thoughts become quelled and you move to a higher level of perception and contentment. So important. And I think even on a practical standpoint for the devotees of the Krishna conscious movement, the gift we've been given of a meditation, a powerful process of meditation, where the object of meditation is not just a prop to study our consciousness, but it's actually God in sound that can reciprocate with our effort and help us achieve a higher degree of concentration than we can by our own karmic abilities. an object of meditation that is Krishna that's all attractive. When you steady the mind, you'll actually perceive Krishna and feel him as all attractive. And to take advantage of this in the morning, on your asana, sitting straight, meditating on the holy name, it's the greatest benediction. Even psychosomatically, it's the greatest benediction. What to speak of devotionally? Because it molds the mind to a higher level of perception and contentment. And the rest of the day, you're going to have to deal with that world. Whether you live outside, whether you live in the temple, whether you go on Sankirtan, whether you stay in the temple and clean it, whatever you do, you're going to have to deal with the world that doesn't move according to your desires, which is the source of suffering on the material platform. And then you have a mind that's elevated and can actually perceive something clearer. That is so essential. You can't be happy in the world on a material conception of life, because the material conception of life is the enjoyer. To be the enjoyer, you have to be the controller, and we're not. So if your happiness is the world the way I want it, it's not going to happen. Because the way you want the world is not the best for you. The way you want the world is not the best for others. The way God wants the world is the best for you and others. You may not like it. Sridhar Swami, my dear godbrother, great soul. He used to preach in New York. He passed away. You would have liked him. He's a, what you see is what you get, man. And it's really, he was great. What you see is what you get. And he had that. He had little metal Halberton briefcase. I forgot what the name of it, those metal briefcases. He had two stickers. Halliburton. He had two stickers. First one, I can't repeat the second word, but you'll fill it in. Same something, different day. Then the last one was, who said that? He said, life is tough and then you die. And why is it tough? It's tough because, and I think in these purports here, I was looking at, Prabhupada said the whole thing is solved. The whole thing is solved by Krishna consciousness, because when it's Krishna consciousness, your motive, your happiness, your faith, your value system is service. And service is not dependent on how the world moves around you. It's dependent on your consciousness. So you can't become happy unless you have changed your faith to service to Krishna. And we all struggle with this. As long as the false ego is breathing and alive, it's going to dictate that conception of the world where my happiness is my superiority, not my service. And we struggle with that. And therefore, we need to hear this. As a foundation of Krishna consciousness, we need to hear this. We need to hear Sankhya. We need to hear the Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter. And we need to hear it again and again and again, because it's the foundation. It's called Sambandha Gyan. Sambandha Gyan, it basically, I would say there's three aspects of philosophy. Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. And I think all philosophical systems can be divided in this way. You have to have your conception of what is reality. Then you have to have your conception of how to realize reality. And then you have to have your conception of what is the result of doing so. So in bhakti, our conception of reality is Sambandha Gyan. Krishna and Krishna's energies. That's our conception. Our means to realize it, Abhideya Gyan, is bhakti. And our Prayojan, our goal, is realizing that, which means feeling that, because we have a relationship with reality. This is different from other conceptions of philosophy. We have a relationship with reality, and when we realize it, we feel it, and that's called prema. But of these different categories, the most important for us is sambandha gyan, a description of reality. And therefore, the Bhagavatam is 80% sambandha gyan. And therefore, Prabhupada spoke 80% sambandha gyan. And this is called Siddho Pradesh, instructions that give perfection. And why does it give perfection? The example was given of digging for a treasure. The first thing is knowing where the treasure is. Then the second thing is the means to extract it, and the third thing is enjoying it. But it's implied, if you know where the treasure is, the other things will come. So this is sambandha gyan. And sambandha gyan has three aspects. Matter, spirit, and controller of both. The first aspect is the relationship. If you want to understand reality, you have to know the relationship between matter and spirit. You have to understand the relationship between spirit and God. You have to understand the relationship between God and matter. We have to understand our relationship with matter. We are not matter. We have to understand the relationship between spirit and God. We are not God. We have to understand the relationship between God and matter. God is not matter. And if you get any of those wrong, you can't practice bhakti. You won't develop a relationship with Krishna. And specifically the first one, because if you think you are the body, then you will think you are the enjoyer rather than God. And you'll invest all your energy in this transformational thing. And then, of course, the disclaimer, while you're in the body, there is social, occupational, different things. God gives directions how our material nature can be regulated and pacified so it doesn't disturb our meditation. That's also there within our philosophy. But this is foundational, and it's amazing. You know, it's not the mind. But then it goes all the way up to the fact that all the anxiety is in the mind. It goes to the fact of death. It's all in the mind. You don't die. You just think you're dying because you're identifying with the body, which is repeatedly dying. Okay, I did leave, uncharacteristically of me, 5 minutes. I've really been using this Vaisheshika Prabhu technique, even I was just in Russia. Leave some time, reflections. Anybody remember anything? Anybody remember anything from the class? No? An Akashvani? What?
He was sharing your mantra at the beginning of the class.
What?
He was sharing your mantra at the beginning of the class. Uh-oh. Now, all suffering is an act.
Kishore?
Yeah, I'm also appreciating this point about suffering being perceptual.
Perceptual.
How the suffering in our mind. How I'm also thinking around about how guidance is knowledge is. You can actually really meditate on it and really try to internalize it. And, how can we work through maintaining that level of consciousness?
How can we maintain that level of consciousness? Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevya. You go to the Bhagavatam class every day and you hear it. Because when you hear knowledge, you begin to think and try to understand it. And then you'll apply it. And then when you apply it, then it becomes realized and it changes your mind. So if you don't regularly reflect in one way or another on the Bhagavatam and on this type of knowledge, then you won't change. That's why it's so important. And my experience is there too, is that in my preaching, the point when people really transform and really become committed is when they start hearing the Shastra systematically. And before that, they may come so many times. But when that happens, they hear the Shastra systematically in a way that speaks to their frame of reference. It changes their outlook. And therefore, the class doesn't begin in the day, the whole life. I was speaking to Vaisheshika Prabhu recently, and he told me a very interesting thing. We were sharing about writing. And he was talking about these famous comedians. And they were really, really funny and wrote these incredible things like the Seinfelds and all this. And the comedian had this comedic lens. And he'd keep a pencil and paper. And whenever he would see something funny, he would write it down. So I thought in the same way. And that was his point. We have to have this philosophical lens from hearing the Shastra. And then in the world, we'll begin to see what we've read. And then that will change our vision of the world, to actually see it in the proper way. Adi?
Yeah. When it comes to questions, the question to me is joyful enthusiasm, presenting this. And the whole idea of being carried to a higher level of thinking that they go around in the problem. I just want to add that I wonder what Krishna is.
You know, I was reading a book on how to give lectures, and they say the presentation has to be really good, but the most important thing is the content. No. He was saying the great lecture, he's giving all these points about great lectures, but the content. And the person has to be enthusiastic about the content. That's what you're saying, Jai?
Philosophy on the basis of emotions. And you can't neglect emotion on the basis of philosophies of my mind. I was remembering chapter 17 of Bhagavad Gita about the five austerities of speech, and it should be truthful, it should also be pleasing. But when those two are clashing with one another, like the truth may not always be pleasing, then it's really hard to walk this fine line. And at least I you don't know which one side of the thing is true when there's a clash.
It always comes down to what Prabhupada said, it takes intelligence, because the sadhu has to cut the false ego. He has to be careful not to cut the heart. So it's like a surgeon sometimes, you know, and it depends on the circumstance also. You know, the emotionally laden audience, you may have to be like, you may have to blow their minds, Jai. And then the audience that's, you know, the other side, they may have to understand, you know. I just think it takes thoughtfulness how to do that, you know. And I just think that, you know, Krishna consciousness, like bhakti, everything is like taking a perfect shower. You got one hand on the hot water and one hand on the cold water. You know, can't be too hot or can't be too cold. You know, it's a negotiation, you know. And I think different people also have different roles. We're a society. I think certain people's roles are boom, right? Life is tough and then you die. Too bad. And then other people, you know, more accommodating. And I think, you know, the Bhakti Center, they said that they're, their foundation, you know, I have a good answer for this, but then I'll first say one thing is that, you know, firmly rooted branching out. And what I see, the balance is by people who have sambandhagyan. People who study the Shastra know that balance. That's the answer. People who actually study the Shastra you know, you can't say they're conservative, you can't say they're liberal. You know, they have a balanced view. Pradyumna Prabhu told me that what Sambandhagyan means, one definition of Sambandhagyan is the relationship between one truth and another. Like, here's the truth. This is a truth, right? Attachment and detachment, right? If it's not balanced, right, you have detachment this big and attachment this big. You have detachment this big, attachment this big, and then your philosophy comes, he's a grihasta. You know, he can't be a devotee. You know, he's not living in the temple. He can't be a devotee. She's a woman. She can't be a devotee. Then you have it that way. And then if you have attachment too big and detachment too small, you know, then you resent the renounced order of life. I remember one sannyasi was coming to a community. He told the guru, no, we don't want him coming here preaching renunciation. You know, what is a sannyasi supposed to preach? You know, so you go the other way. So I think that balance, combined with our own personalities and our own fervor, what really, you know, what parts of the philosophy really inspire us, you know, and we mix that with, you know, the balance and then the role in society, the time and the circumstance, and then it works. You know, people get freaked out because something's said too heavy, but it's okay. And then people get freaked out because something's said too light, and it's okay. Rabindra Sarup, who gave an interesting example here at one time, and I'll just stop here because I see it's time. You know, we went on the first Brajmandal Parikram, and all the leaders of the society went, all the GBCs, because it used to be during the GBC meeting. You know, at the end, he made a point. He said, you know, Prabhupada said that there'd be an ISKCON in the spiritual world, and I was starting to have doubts. Do I want to be an ISKCON in the spiritual world? You know, there's an ISKCON in the spiritual world. You know, but then he was appreciating when everybody got together. And he gave the example. He said, it's like there's many shapes of rocks in a river, but as the river flows, over the years, they all become round in the same shape. So I think, you know, that's ISKCON. Throw them all together, different shapes, different sizes, different opinions. And if they're sincere, then there's unity and diversity. Okay, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Now we were supposed to say that. Oh my God, it didn't work.
Oh my God, it didn't work.